Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hi, everyone. This is Mema Carmo, and you're on the Pure Bliss Show. Today, we have an amazing guest with us. His name is Dev Halpern. He's a licensed psychotherapist who provides counseling to individuals, families, and corporations. Dev's major focus is on couples counseling. He has a TV show where he helps couples to recharge their marriage and to have better communication, better intimacy, and more fun in their relationships. Dev, welcome to the Pure Bliss Show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Mema. It's such a pleasure.
It's great talking to you. When we talked a few weeks ago, I really enjoyed your energy. I love what you do. And I love your passion to help couples who are married to communicate better, to enhance their marriage, and to build better relationships. So tell me, first of all, who is Dev Halpern?
Wow.
I love that answer. I think that's the answer, right? Wow. That just tells everybody, you know, Dev is wow.
Great wow. Response. I'm a passionate, wow. You know, I've always been a very passionate person about what I do. I was brought up in a passionate environment. Father was a clergyman. So many things that other people don't think are important were important in this bubble that I grew up in. So I learned to be sensitive to people's hurt and to people's feelings. And that sometimes, honestly, it can be a curse, but it's helped me more than it's hindered me. When I'm in the room, I'm feeling people's, like, oh, this person's just not feeling very good. This person... they're happy. I have that sense. I see it in their faces and what they're saying. And it comes from back a long time ago. The skill. I learned.
Yeah, I think that's, so you're very empathic, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's the way you phrased it was very powerful. It's a blessing and a curse. Because when you're somebody who's an empathic, you feel everyone's feelings, good and bad. And as a child, it's a hard thing to learn to balance, but as an adult, it's a wonderful tool to have, especially with the kind of work that you and I do.
Right. I mean, once in a while, you know, you see this bad person, you know, and you just see they have no empathy, nothing. And you go,
yeah.
Oh, must be great. Must be just so, no weight on your back. Must be, but I'm not so sure it is. But, sometimes I just have that. I feel that little thing come through where I go, I wonder what it would be like to not be empathic. I just don't know. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to know. I've been like that myself since I was a child. And I used to feel people's energy and I would start crying or I'd get happy or I would go to hug them. And
exactly.
People would literally come to me sometimes, just come over to me and stand beside me or ask me questions as a young adult. But I think that people need to have people who are empathic around because the world is changing and we need much more connectivity, much more love, intimacy, and understanding.
You know, they're lonely. There's a lot of loneliness.
Yeah.
There's a lot of desolation. A lot of people feel non-connected. They feel disconnected.
So how do you help couples in that aspect? Because people can be married. So I've heard many women and men say, I want to find that true partner. When I find that partner, I'm going to be happy and live happily ever after. But that's not the truth. The truth is that even in a marriage, you have to work at communication, intimacy, and connectivity on a regular basis. So tell me how you do that with couples.
I think you have to start in one place. You know, a lot of times I speak to couples, one of them, they're hurting and they're lost. And they need direction and they're looking for somebody to take them by the hand and say, what do I do? They'll bring you a list of, you know, 30 things, or their spouse will come into even with a list of 3 pages long, you know, and I ask them, could they please put the list away? And let's start with one thing that makes sense to the two of them that they can connect, a place where they do connect. And there usually is. There's usually a place where they connect. And that's the place to start, to get into that thing where they both feel like, okay, well, we have some common ground here because, you know, they're angry and they're upset and they're worried about their future and the future of their relationship. So you got to get something to hang your hat on. And I try to find that thing. I try to get them to work very hard to get at it, to get them to reach in and find one thing at a time, not 100 things, because nobody can deal with 100 things at a time.
So should couples counseling be a thing that's mandatory, meaning that I think that people should be getting counseling on a regular basis, much like you do in your regular life. But I have a coach myself that I talk to regularly to kind of help me navigate my life and make sure I'm on the right track and to deal with challenges. I think that when you wait till you're sick to go to a doctor, then the problem's exacerbated. So do you find that, or would you suggest people see a couples coach on a more regular basis and not wait for them to have problems, or
I think even
wait till have the problem and then show up?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think even before they had, you know, couples counseling or premarital counseling or pre-couples counseling, they should teach us a little bit about what happens in marriage. You know, what are some of the possible,
right.
You know, give me a heads up, please. You know, tell me what, why didn't
right.
it going to happen? Why didn't they say that this is what happens after the smoke clears and after all the crazy hot sex and all that, and all of a sudden there's this, now what? And it would
right.
be good to have a heads up. I think fair. Your question about counseling, not everybody would go, but it sure would be good if it was mandatory. It would help keep people more honest about who they are, what they want from their lives. Because, you know, marriage is a couple, but it's also two people with two heads, male, female, or, you know, male, male, however it is, there's two heads. And they react to different things and they respond to different things, and they all have a different set of baggage that they bring to the relationship. And baggage is an issue for couples.
Right. Well, I think that sometimes people go into marriages with certain expectations of someone to fulfill them. But if you go into a marriage or any relationship, even as a friendship, and you're not self-aware, just the fact that you're not being self-aware is going to cause you to have problems in a relationship. And in a marriage, it's going to be even more enhanced because you're with a person you think is going to make your life, you know, better.
Right, and it also has who that person is. Are they passive? Are they assertive? Are they aggressive? You know, do they, if they don't like what's happening, do they let you know and know on certain terms? And how do you react to that if you're just feeling like, what's wrong with this relationship? It used to be so good. We used to be so close. What happened? You know, and then now you're responding to yelling, and there's a bad mood and not really feeling very good about it, and nowhere to go with it, except be screamed at. And not a fun feeling for a lot of people who came into marriage with the kind of feelings you're talking about. Blind.
So what, right. So what are some myths about marriage people go into this thing with? What are some of the myths they go into this social contract with that are should be debunked before going into the marriage?
People need to realize, one thing is, people don't stay the same. People change. You know, it's not... People change, and therefore marriages change, and they don't change at the same time. People change, you know, they have challenges. There's physical challenges, emotional challenges, career, all this child-related, you know, we could make a long list. It changes, and how we deal with it changes. And sometimes some couples, even, you know, somebody goes get help and the other one doesn't, and, you know, that's a big problem. But somebody grows and the other one stays stagnant. So that's a big myth. It's important to grow with the relationship and to recognize, you know, that your spouse is going to grow, and that life pushes us that way, especially now at the speed of, you know, a marriage at the speed of life. It's a fast track. Some people just not equipped.
Right.
Plus, they look, you know, also, they go in with the same views that they grew up with. They watch their parents. If their parents were the kind that didn't fight in front of them, you know, then they think, hey, nobody ever fights. There was never any fights. I mean, I'm sure there was, but, you know, they just didn't do it in front. Then they have the other ones that had knocked down, drag out fights in front of them, and they go, oh my God, you know, they knew when to clear out. They knew not when to be in the house. But I think they bring those things. And sometimes we fall in love with people who were just really different than us.
Yeah.
And they from a cave very far away that's not the same at all. So I think that's a big, you know, big myth.
You just mentioned something. You mentioned arguments. So I know that, you know, having a knockdown, drag-out argument that's not productive or is abusive is not healthy. But isn't it healthy to have arguments sometimes just to kind of get out your perspectives on things? Have your opinion, get it out there, disagree, and say, okay, we don't agree on this topic, but we've gotten our ideas on the table.
Look, there are a lot of people who right now are thinking about something that they need to say to their spouse. They just want to say it. And because they haven't, and they don't have that skill or practice of speaking their mind or saying what's going on with them or having that exchange, they're just lonely and desperate to say the things that they want to say. And it's not so easy because the mood isn't great anymore. So they have fears. What if I say that? What is he going to say? You know, what's she going to do if I do that? If I say that's really on my mind? There's a lot of anticipation, a lot of, you know, thinking, overthinking. Just kind of a couple who's honest with each other from the beginning is probably much better off. You know, says the things that are uncomfortable, you know, and just lets the chips fall where they may is probably going to be a couple that lasts longer. Or one that just realizes that they're not for each other instead of languishing, you know, in this huddle that some marriages stay in for a very long time.
Yeah, that's very true. So, you know, so communication is really important. That's key, as you just said. What are two other things that you find are important to ensure that marriages don't fail? What are things that couples could do to avoid having a marriage fall apart?
I think they need to keep their marriage challenged. They need to do things, and they don't have to be rich to do it. There's a lot of things that you can do. Go out, be with each other, not just the classical thing that you hear about, you know, date night. You know, some people have the date night thing, and some like it and some don't, but adding a little more mystery to the date night or learning that once things get boring, there are a lot of things they can do to change it. And there's books and there's things that tell you all these amazing things couples can do, you know, in their bedrooms, in their kitchens, wherever. And I'm not just talking about sex. That is a major topic. But I'm talking about just getting out. You know, a lot of times, I don't like what you do. I don't want to go to the ballet. But screw the ballet. You go to the ballet with your girlfriend. You know, really, you know,
well,
love somebody.
It's good to have time apart, too, isn't there? And it's good to have time apart to have your own hobbies. I find that couples that have their own lives are very healthy as well. I mean, you want to have things in common that you do, but you want to have things that you can do with your guy friends or your girlfriends and then come back together with your spouse and say, here's what I did. And that way you're both healthy as individuals and as a couple.
And feel that you can do that and feel that you have, you know, that you don't need permission. I mean, there's such a thing, you know, obedience and permission. Can I go out, please, you know, to the, you know, with the guys where it should be, hey, I'm going out, you know, see the guys tonight, you know, or I'm taking a class, you know, or I'm doing something different. You know, people get scared of that stuff. You know, they worry about change, other influences. They get paranoid. Instead of, in some way, supporting each other's growth as individuals, which is something that makes for good marriages.
Yeah, I think people oftentimes think that change is bad. Whereas I think it's a good thing for marriages because people are going to grow, like you said, and change. And the more you can understand your spouse as they're evolving, the more you can support them in that growth and grow
especially
together.
Especially in the long marriages. I mean, things change. You know, when I said people change, hey, your body changes. You know, sometimes things just don't work. And all of a sudden it's kind of like, uh-oh, what happened
oh,
with that?
Gosh.
You know, like,
what happened with
what
that?
Did I do? Love me anymore. No, I don't, not that I don't love you anymore, but you know, we've, you know, it's an age thing. And there are things that can be done. Many, many things that can be done where everybody gets, you know, satisfied and happy. Look, I bought my wife a vibrator for the holidays. You know, a real nice.
Oh my God.
I would put a high end one. Yeah. You know? I have a guest on the show who sells them. And I think, that night, I think she made 3 sales, you know, to some
That's
other people.
That's amazing.
Or, you know, because these are pretty high-end stuff. There's nothing seedy about these things. They work. They're made very well.
Well, no, it's important. It's really important. I think it's important to talk about sex and talk about the truth. People, some things sometimes don't work, and sometimes things need enhancement and need excitement, and people do get bored. So I think talking about sex and the spicy parts of dating is, I mean, it keeps things alive.
I mean, people are stimulated by different things. So there you got, you know, a marriage, 2 people, they get stimulated by by lots of different things. And it doesn't always happen in this timely, it's time, honey. You know, it doesn't happen like that. It is. Well, it's not time for me. You know, it's time for me to watch whatever I'm watching. Go upstairs and, you know, have fun. But some couples can't say that. My wish is that couples were so open that they could say those kind of things, and free themselves from the, you know, I mean, especially inside their marriages. I mean, outside, you know, in the outside, the people are weird. In a week, I'm speaking to a group of 25 couples about lust and bliss. All right. I have no idea how they're going to receive what I have to say. And I'm certainly going to put it out there because, you know, when you ask me who I am, you know, I'm someone who puts it out there. I'm going to tell them that their local drugstore now has turned into a sex boutique. If they see it, you know, if they go in there for deodorant, great, you know, but go over to this one section and look, they got hundreds of products for, you know, romantic enhancement products.
Let me ask you a question. Why is it people think that everybody wants to have sex, everybody loves sex? Why is it so taboo in relationships? I mean, I have friends of mine who won't tell their boyfriends what they want in bed. Some people wouldn't tell their husbands that they masturbate in secret. Like, what is the big deal about people hiding their sexual desires? Maybe I could be wrong, but I think that in the comfort of a relationship that's stable, like a marriage, you do want to be able to explore and have fun. What's the big deal about hiding sexual proclivities? Why is that?
To do with the way they are. It has to do with their ability to disclose. It has to do with their ability to disclose other things. Maybe even talk about money. You know, maybe even talk about other things that are hard to talk about. It's very difficult. You know, our society just doesn't, you know, exactly give us the license to talk about the things you and I are talking about today, Mama. That, you know, actually they point a finger. You know, in your mind you can see somebody, don't talk about that stuff. You know, that's a no-no. You know, don't even think things like that. But, you know, that's the message that they come into marriage with. And, you know, look, marriage, male, female, you know, female could be, you know, sometimes a lot of stuff about a female is about mom to the guy. Nobody told him, you know. There are certain things that he was attracted to her about. Some of it is about the mom thing and the dad thing. It exists inside of it. So there's things that are that you wouldn't want to, you know, pollute or bring this other stuff into the marriage. But the marriages that work better are the ones where people are much more honest about all that. 2 pursuits, 2 heads, 2 lives, dynamic lives, or, you know, helping out with each other. Helping out with the house, you know, as boring as that is, going out, having the freedom to be your own person as well. It's not, you know, we don't find that, as much as I wish that it was, because people are really dragged down by social mores, and they're pretty strong. Even in our, you know, Tinder world, you know, where everybody hooks up and everybody, you know, I have young daughter, you know, hook up, you know, even in that, people still get back to the traditional when they get back into the marriage. When they marry, they get back into the traditional. Can't talk about this. Can't talk about that. I mean, maybe the
Hashtag boring.
Hashtag boring.
That's boring.
I actually talked about this on the last show was, you know, I'm sitting there, Zeb is sitting watching TV, and all of a sudden, you know, that famous underwear company comes on, you know, and you want to see more of that commercial if you're a guy. You know, you want to see,
of course,
when's that special going to be on, you know, for that. It's
right.
Because you're a male, you're responding to things, you know, it's not even you, but, you know, you're sitting with your spouse and there's a bit of uncomfortable. No, like, uh-oh, change the channel, you know, I don't want to show.
Why is that, though? I think, for me as a woman, I would want my partner to be happy. So I would not change the channel. As a matter of fact, so let me ask you a question. So we were having a discussion, me and some friends of mine and I, about porn, right? And some of the girls didn't want their boyfriends or husbands watching porn, and some did. Now, I get that people abuse pornography, or they get to become addicted to it, but I don't think anything's bad about a healthy interest in that in a relationship. What is your opinion on that?
I don't either. I think, like you said, it can be a replacement for having a relationship with your spouse if things aren't going well. You know, porn doesn't talk back and porn doesn't yell back at you. Porn just turns you on and to where you're trying to go, you know, without a whole lot of complications. Personally, I think it serves a big need in our society. There are many negative points to it, you know, kids being able to access
it. Well, yes,
it.
Of course.
I mean, there's a lot of negative, but in an adult relationship, you know, come on. There are couples who watch porn together. There are couples who get the thing going starting with porn, for good or bad, and whose judgment is right. You know, what's right is what's right for you. And,
right.
I think, you know, porn, if it wasn't porn, the magazines used to sell like crazy, and, you know, you reach into the wrong closet under the towel, you'll find some magazine in the old, you know.
I think every child discovered their parents', you know, hidden stash or hidden equipment by mistake, you know, the ones that are like hidden on top of the shelf,
you know,
where you can't reach.
Yeah. I found a few of
I'm
those.
I'm just saying. Me too.
Found a few of those.
I thought they were like, I thought they were massage, you know, massage machines.
Well, they would call. What
oh my goodness!
Well, they call them marital aids, and usually the store would be like next to the Trailway bus station, the seediest place that it could possibly be. Not anymore. You know, now it's all small. In other countries, it's next to the library. You know.
Well, now it's everywhere.
Absolutely.
Well, even now, in today's society, it's on your phones, it's via apps, it's really out there.
Look, not everybody. Not everybody can have an orgasm from regular sex. They want to have it. They're looking for it. They're trying to, you know, that's part of their own individual quest. Shouldn't they be entitled, you know, to have that? Shouldn't they be entitled to, you know, find, you know, the peak experience of their sexuality? I think yes. The world, I'm not sure. I don't go by the world, so, you know, lucky me.
I think it depends on what each couple wants as a couple. Now, tell me about this. I know you have a segment on your show called Sexpectations, where you discuss certain topics partners are afraid to discuss with their marital partner. For example, you call some of them, like, sex-thirsty people, or some who want to have a more kinky relationship or explore, you know, other couples, whatever. Tell me about Sexpectations and what happens during those segments.
I mean, basically in those segments, we talk and have a conversation, you know, in the marriage panel. And we talk about, and these are people who are professionals. Some of them are professionals, you know, in the field, in the helping field. Some of them are, you know, in law or finance, different kinds of things, but they're in marriages. Either they've been married or they're currently married. And so we talk about the issues, what we just talked about, the whole issue of how is their sex life and, you know, how's it going, and would they be willing to. We try to put it out there, you know, just like in front of people so that they can see that this is a normal thing that people do. They want to find ways to increase their sexual pleasure, both between themselves and individually, and how to do that, and how to ask for what you want, and how to not be turned off, by giving it a chance. I went into a store where they have not just, you know, they have gifts and toys and all kinds of things. They had a whole, half the store of this gift store, it's a regular gift store in the mall, was sex related. It had checkbooks where you could give your spouse a check that says, here's a check for a blowjob. You know, great.
So where the heck, where is the store? Is it?
Actually, Spencer Gift.
Oh, I know that store. They're in the mall. They're in any mall.
Mall.
Yes.
So in there, they have more stuff related to sex in from A to Z than I've seen, you know, except for, you know, a store that's particular to that. You know, when you walk in the con, where they don't always have, where they have a curtain in the front. You know, Spencer Gift doesn't have a curtain in the front. Walk in there, you know, 5-year-olds, 80-year-olds. And for presents, I think they find, you know, other things. There are sex games. There are sex, you know, like a book. Well, let's try this 365 days, you know, of sex. And, you know, they try things.
People sometimes, you would think, don't have certain type of proclivities, but I've been with a friend to those stores, and it's surprising who comes out of those stores and out of those back rooms, you know, people that are just, you think, you know, they look respectable, they look very, straight-laced and proper. Everybody has a need to be fulfilled sexually, you know, and I think that also turns into intimacy. It's all intermingled, the communication, the intimacy, the sexuality. And then just that's what makes the couple work as partners in a relationship. But I think that, you know, while we all like to, you know, talk about certain things that are more PC, like communication, having intimate conversation, having intimacy in bed, it's all lovemaking, but it's lovemaking all the time, whether you're in bed or just talking, right? See, it's all about being intimate in and out of bed. It's communication out of bed, and it's being able to touch your partner and talk to the partner in the way they like to be touched or talked to you in or out.
And that we are confronted by things that stimulate us during the day. People, things, movies, movie stars. I mean, look at the beach in the summertime or on the beach. Look what you see on the beach. What are they reading? They're reading a good book or whatever, but many are reading, you know, highly sexual related books about the Middle Ages, you know, and, you know, with these,
I have not read those books yet, though.
Yeah, and, you know, so it's all going on, and people are, you know, they're getting off in different kinds of ways. They're just not together necessarily. They're not necessarily talking.
Do you find that when couples can communicate clearly and often and in a way that's very stimulating, it leads to better intimacy in the bedroom? I think it does. What's your opinion on that? Yeah.
There's no doubt, you know, that people who communicate their needs get their needs met more than people who don't. And at some point, if you're somebody who lives in a relationship and, you know, you're scared to say what's on your mind, you know, you have one life to live. You've got to say it. You have to find a way to say it. Look, you understand this spouse who you have. You can't just blurt it out. You have, you know, find a reasonable way to say that you're not getting, you know, what you need or that you'd like to experiment, you know, with this. I mean, I urge people to experiment, explore, play. And adults and play is a whole nother, I mean, that's a whole thing that also gets lost. You know, we somehow fall into adulthood and we forget about what playing is. And, you know, you see it more, I see it clearly in the morning at a beach where you see the 5-year-old kid run into the freezing cold water. It doesn't matter, you know, I wouldn't run into the freezing cold water, but they do. They want to play in the water. And for something about us, adults, we get, play is like not to be respected. It's, you know, some kind of ethic that's out there that says, you know, work and be mature and do all this. Well, I think you got to let that go, you know, sometimes. And you have to carve out a playground for yourself. Whether it be your bedroom, your whole house, you know, whatever, you know, the earliest sexual experiences you had, you know, where you did it in someone's backyard, who knows what. I've asked people that. Like I'm going to ask those 25 people in 2 weeks, like, let's hear about it. I think it's going to be quiet unless, you know, I'm hoping I'm hoping for, you know, for a reasonable somebody to be brave, but I'm not sure. But I, you know, when it comes to that, people get real tight-lipped, you know, about that stuff.
Well, I think so. What is it? I think it's important to play. I love that you said that. It's important to play in life and play in your work, play in your life, and play in your love relationship. When you stop playing, then you lose the fun of life. And I think that, you know, when people start to see their lives as being so serious and have to be an adult and be grown up, that's when things get really mundane. You
know? And I would understand why that happens, and I'm sure you would. You know, life can get pretty damn serious. Too serious.
Yeah, but it's a choice, though. Don't you think it's a choice you make? I think that, I mean, for example, I'll just tell you, for my life, I mean, I run a breast cancer organization. I'm a single mom. I run several businesses. So my life's pretty intense, but I made a conscious choice to never stop playing. And so I think it's more of a conscious decision you make to never stop playing, because when you think about life, it is serious. There's bills, there's, you know, taxes, there's people who are sick and dying. There's always something going on in the news. So, you know, we really have to choose, right? You have to live consciously and choose to be in a certain space.
Yeah, and like one of the classic things people say to somebody, are you game? Are you game? Game is about playing, you know, even in the most serious ways. Are you game?
Yeah.
I think it's important to ask, you know the partner that you're marrying, for better or worse, whether they're game or not. But unfortunately, they don't tell us to ask that question. You know, we ask other questions. So, you know,
exactly.
Children, you want to have this, you know, not, you know, are you game? For exploring, beyond the usual. Some couples are lucky enough to do that. Some couples stay very confined in the status quo. I mean, there are more people living in the status quo than aren't living in the status quo. And whatever they tell you, even if they tell you they have sex, you know, like 100 times a week, you know.
Is that possible?
I don't know. Hey, if it is, good luck.
I've never tried.
I mean, I guess I would buy some products for chafing, you know, but.
I mean, you go to Spencer's ASAP for products, right?
Yeah, back products, right. Yes.
So let me ask you a question. You talked earlier about being a preacher's son, and, you know, and you talked about, when we last had a conversation, you know, you're a very soft-spoken person. I think people might mistake that for somebody who's maybe shy and not able to or even want to discuss certain topics. What made the preacher's son with a soft voice turn into a marriage and sex expert? That is extremely entertaining and so much fun.
I think, you know, look, I had a lot of people, you know, I grew up, I was inspired by what my father did for people. He was with them in their neediest time, and I saw it. I was, you know, eyewitness. They came to our house. I saw some of the most serious things that happened to people in their family. And there's also, with me, there's something a bit irreverent. It evolved. It's just something about, maybe as just something against that, you know, the whole serious of that. I got to be a little irreverent, about certain things,
right,
and managed to be able to, after, you know, going to all these boys' schools where all they said was no all the time, you know, to say, you know what, yeah, I'm going to do this, you know, or I'm going to risk it, you know, and I paid a price for being that. But I think it was worth it. I think the price was worth it. Not everybody can take that, you know, kind of adult scrutiny. And I had lots of it, but I found ways, you know, to climb under the fence. You know, I dug tunnels.
I went to all-girls Catholic school growing up, and my parents are Episcopalian, and I grew up in a very, very religious household. And I'm the oldest of five children, so I have four brothers. And for some reason, I ended up being the naughty one, you know, always pushing the envelope, always being incorrigible, asking inappropriate questions. And people would always ask that question,
yeah.
But they would always laugh. They say, don't ask the question. Don't make that joke. Don't say the bad word. But if I did, they would laugh. People have an innate need to be naughty sometimes and have fun, you know. Otherwise, life is boring.
Yeah, and sometimes some people like to see and wish that they could be that way. And, you know, they also like to see the naughty person punished as well. But, you know, they
It also, that's what like, all the conversation says.
Yeah, that go somebody ahead. Got free. You know, somebody freed themselves. you know, oh, they got free. You know, and then, you know, but I think, look, I was the middle of five, and I was the one who did the, you know, the things, and hey, you know, out of punishment and all those times, you know, hanging out, you know, alone in your room, I guess you come up with some ideas. You know,
that is.
I don't want to go to prison to find that out. You know, so. I heard that's a whole other reality.
Every time I talk to you, I laugh hysterically. I don't know how your wife can handle this. I would be laughing the entire day all the time. I think you're an amazing person, and you're so much fun. So you know, tell me three things that are interesting that people don't know about you.
Three things that are interesting. Well, I mean, mostly, you know, I mean, you certainly covered one of them, and that is I'm soft-spoken. And people definitely see that sometimes as, you know, he's shy or, so they just don't know that I kind of have the devil in my eyes, you know, when I'm looking that way. I'm not thinking what they're thinking I'm thinking. And, but they tend to group me, in that kind of way. I was, like I said, I was in the principal's office more than the principal. I was, you know, I might have lifted the girls, you know, dress up once or twice, you know.
Oh my gosh!
In elementary school,
looking,
you know, and go like,
looking for what, Deb? Terrible.
Looking for curiosity, you know, and that got quickly, you know, that curiosity got changed, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh my goodness!
Always understood, you know, there was something very mysterious, you know, about girls and women and, you know, especially, you know, you went to an all-girls school, I went to an all-boys school. The things I, you know, saw there and, you know, how people coped, you know, we find our way and, it makes us. And, I just think people don't look at me as the person, you know, who was in the principal's office all the time and who was
in charge. So what's the third thing? There were three things. So you mentioned that you're soft-spoken, that people don't know that you're soft-spoken. You mentioned that you're curious. That's number two, right? If I'm not incorrect. What is the third thing people don't know about you that you want to share?
I think that, I have a pretty developed sense of justice, about a lot of things. I care deeply about, people who are hurting. And, I'll go to big ends, you know, to try to do something about it. I was extremely affected by watching, you know, limited people growing up. And I saw lots of them, you know, in the, congregation and in different kinds of, and for some reason, I felt this affinity for them. And I always went and did, you know, volunteer work and things like that, with populations, you know, that weren't as fortunate. Actually, the kind where nobody would go. Institutions where people would never go. You know, they've never even seen that kind of thing. But for me, that was like, God, these are human beings. They're like, I gotta do something. You know, there, again, back to the beginning, there were times where I wish I didn't feel that way. I wish I could just be callous, you know, be callous. What is that like? You know, I don't know. You know, it doesn't make me any kind of superstar. It doesn't make me any kind of special person. It just makes me, you know, somebody who leads by caring. And I think that's an important thing. People know that I care, and they also know that this quiet, shy guy going to speak his mind if he sees something. And I've always been that way. It doesn't matter which authority figure I'm speaking to. If they're doing something, you know, I'm going to tell them. And it doesn't make you the most popular person, but, you know, I sleep better at night for that. And I think, you know, a lot of those things that I'm telling you about, I did without fanfare. I don't want any. You know, I did it because I thought I got something out of it. It was extremely fulfilling, you know, to work with people who are, you know, labeled, all kinds of things. And, it definitely fortified me.
Yeah, so beneath all your work is a sense of empathy to help other people, whether
I know we've been laughing a lot and having a great time, but beneath all of this relationship coaching, helping, you know, couples who are single or married, or even the sex talk, is getting people to understand each other, to communicate, and to feel less alone, to feel more connected, right? I think that's really powerful. And, I mean, the show's all about living your life, living bliss and being happy, and that's at the core of what you do every day for people.
Right, and I was recently in a book called The Courage to Be. There were 9 authors who wrote about courage. And, you know, it's about everybody has courage. You got to reach in. You got to reach deep to find it, but you can find it. And for me, you know, in courage was it's a platform. You got to step out onto it, and you got to have courage. And not always so easy, but important, especially
that
in marriage.
That is so powerful.
Married people are courageously trying to stay together. They're trying, you know, but they just don't have the tools, and some of them aren't willing to find them out. But it takes courage to have a marriage, to be in a marriage, and to have children, and to do all those things. It's a courageous effort to get by in this world, and there's a lot of people who are putting on a pretty courageous go of it. And I like to see that.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful that you have to have courage to be who you are in a relationship, you know, in any relationship, and even especially in just the act of living your life. You know, if you don't have courage to be who you are, to stand up and speak about who you are, what you dream about, you're never going to have a truly full life. And, you know, the reason why I host the podcast is to help people to have the courage to live a blissful life and to stand up and say, here's who I am, here's what I want to do, here's what brings me joy, and be brave enough to stand up and walk down that path. It's so easy to say where to be complacent.
And to overcome the scars that people put on you. I mean, they're scars.
Exactly.
Not so easy to overcome them. You know, when people are yelling at you, telling you you're not going to be anything. You know, there are a lot of people experience those things. And, you know,
it takes courage to leave your past behind, I think. It takes courage to say, that was my past. Whether it's your parenting, whether it's past relationships, it takes courage to say, you know, that happened to me, but I am not that thing. And to move forward in life.
100%.
Yeah. So before we sign off, you know, I could talk to you for hours. I have to have you on the show again. Before we sign off the show, tell me 3 ways that you live bliss. How does Zev live a blissful life?
Well, one of them is for sure putting it out there. And you know, I'm living that now more than ever by having a show and being able to do that to, you know, people I know. You know, people say to me, wow, the stuff you say on that show, you know, and I kind of look at them, all right. You know, I mean, I know all kinds of people, religious, non-religious. It's blissful for me to put the stuff out there so that people, you know, can hear it. And, again, people have a lot of I get blowback. I get pushback from it. You know, that they push back on me because, you know, they're not feeling that they can do that, or that, you know, that they're just not ready. But I think living bliss for me is recognizing that, I got a message that I got to put out there, and being able to do it in a medium that, you know, like this with you, a person, you know, who a lot of people respect and listen to, is hugely fulfilling for me. And, I, you know, I've spent a lot of time with people in an office for years and years, you know, and in the last years, you know, I'm out of the office and, you know, into the world to share, what I think people need to hear, to give them license to be able to realize what, you know, their own bliss. People do need license. You got to give it to them. They're looking. Please give me permission. I give you permission. You know, I want to be a person who stands for a, you know, for license, that gives people the right, which is theirs to begin with, to live to their potential, you know, as long as it doesn't, you know, infringe and hurt on other people. Then that's a whole other grouping.
Right. It's a whole other grouping. Well, Zev, I really enjoyed our conversation. You're just amazing, unique, and I think the universe for making you, because you're just somebody who you're brave enough to speak what you love to do, and you're courageous in your work. And I love how you inspire couples to be more open, more intimate, and to share more of themselves in their relationships. So please tell our guests where they can find you on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. What are all your social media channels?
So they can find me on Facebook at Recharge Your Marriage, and my website is rechargeyourmarriagenow.com. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of free stuff there. Please avail yourself of it. There's many guides for all different kinds of issues, intimacy, professional, living professionally. And Twitter is Zev_Halpern.
Well, it's great to have you, my friend. And until next time, live bliss, love bliss, live bliss, love bliss, and be bliss. Have a wonderful day. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you are inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.